While the prisoners hobbled manically out of Cabanatuan and made their way across the moonlit fields toward the river, a Japanese soldier scrambled from his barracks in the rear of the camp and hid himself in a shallow ditch. Quickly, deftly, he set up a small weapon known as a knee mortar. He kicked out the prop legs and ran his fingers over the cool metal tube with the rote dexterity of one experienced in battle. He tipped the weapon toward the front of the camp, where he must have logically assumed that the greatest number of Americans would be found, pouring out the bottleneck at the main gate. Squinting in the subdued silver light, he hurriedly estimated the distance, approximately 600 yards, and roughed out his ballistics calculations accordingly. He dropped a round into the muzzle and braced for the cough. Stunk! With a faint sibilance, the projectile arced high over the camp and homed toward the gate, meeting ground in a loose, ragged explosion. The soldier revised his calculation slightly and dropped in another shell. Stunk! And a third. It is not unreasonable to imagine that the last feeling surging in his breast was one of pride and soldierly accomplishment, for in poor visibility, under trying circumstances, he had struck his distant target with precision. Francis Schilly, Roy Sweezy, and several others from F Company were the first men to detect the mortar. The bright muzzle flame and low pneumatic burst of the weapon unmistakably gave the soldier's position away. Schilly and the others turned to spray him with heavy automatic fire, and abruptly the mortar attack ceased. Around the front gate, at the point of impact, the mortar shells had thrown up clouds of dirt and left a triad of large divots in the road. All the rangers and prisoners in the vicinity had hurled themselves on the ground. Now they lay shaking off the shock and fingering their wounds in the hope that they'd been hit only by rocks or soil debris and not by the lethal shards of a mortar round. The rangers began to suspect that the rounds had incompletely fragmented, because many men standing close to the explosions, such as Captain Prince, had been left unscathed, while a few others caught large hunks of hot shrapnel. One of the unfortunates was an Alamo scout named Alfred Alfonso. He had received a significant fragment in his lower abdomen, and he was losing much blood. A medic ran over to give Alfonso a syringe of morphine and quickly patch him up so he could be ferried across the river. Quickly scanning the area around the front gate, Prince could see that there were a half dozen others down, and he remembered thinking how oddly random the casualties appeared. "It could have been me. It could have been anybody," Prince recalled. There was no rhyme or reason to it. Captain Prince ordered a couple of rangers to scour the area and learn the total number of casualties. The report came back better than he had feared. Although dozens were cut or scraped, only five men needed attention. Miraculously, none of them was a prisoner, and no one seemed to be critically injured. But then a sixth casualty was found. He'd been hard to spot because he was lying down in the roadside ditch and capable of only feeble speech. "Where you hit?" asked John Nelson, one of the medics. "Stomach." The wound was bleeding profusely, warm rivulets spilling through his fingers. Nelson couldn't see his face in the darkness, but with the alacrity and calm haste of a seasoned medic, he began to dress the wound. "Go find Captain Fisher," Nelson said. "This man is badly hurt." The injured man lifted his arm. "I'm Captain Fisher," he said. "What?" Nelson said distractedly. "It's me. Jimmy." Nelson squinted in disbelief. Fisher and he were the best of friends. Nelson was the number one boy, as he called himself, Captain Fisher's first sergeant. Ever since New Guinea, they'd spent endless hours bullshitting with each other. They'd dreamed about taking a long sailing trip around America after the war was over. Now Fisher couldn't move. He lay awkwardly on his back, breathing thinly, the color flushing from his face. The blast from one of the mortar shells had hurled him into the ditch. Fisher knew it was extremely serious. He grimaced and bit his lip. His pulse was thready. The wound was large and jagged, the blood hemorrhaging with his heartbeat. Embedded in his viscera, the shrapnel was hot and serrated, a sharp pressure against the wall of his abdomen. It pained him to draw breath, as though the shard were biting a little deeper into him each time he inhaled. He wasn't positive, but he thought the fragment had struck his liver. As he faded in and out of consciousness, A team of medics moved in fast with a litter to carry their fallen doctor across the Pampanga River toward Platero.